on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Check out the photos at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page to get a look at Charlie Wadhams, who joined the Navy at age 17 and when we left off had been deployed with an LCVP boat crew aboard the USS Brookings in the Pacific. Like so many of the vets you hear on this program, he has a very humble attitude about his service to our country.
I'm not a big hero. I was never in a first wave. We were due to go to Japan in October, but that didn't happen. But we took the, I think it was the 52nd CB. They went into Okinawa to build some airfields on the north end of Okinawa. And all the action was going on down in the mountains on the south. From the beach, we couldn't see a lot of the destruction. Other places, it was much more evident, like Saipan and Iwo Jima, where a lot of the action had taken place right on the beach. Okinawa, they let us come ashore. But the other landings, you had terrible destruction on the beaches. You go in there and their landing craft, those ducks, you know, the big marine things. They'd picked up most of the bodies by the time we got there. And so you didn't see that, but there was just destruction all over the place. I mean, it was really terrible.
You know, I've talked to guys who had your role at Iwo Jima, of taking an LCVP and trying to get guys off, which was really tough because of the tides there, because of the volcanic sand on the beaches there. And they're doing all this while the fire is coming in and guys are getting mowed down. And I imagine for you, when you get there and you're describing some of the aftermath that was visible there, does the thought occur to you, boy, a couple months ago, that could have been me?
Yeah. Well, you bring up a couple of points. Number one, a real trick in driving a landing craft is getting off. And you've got to be extremely careful with the position of your rudder, because if it's not centered, you first start on a wave and go a little ways, and then you got no water, and the next wave comes in and picks you up, and you back out with that. If your rudder isn't straight at that time, it'll bend it. And once you've got a bent rudder, you're all over. I mean, you can't get the boat off, because and a rescue boat may come and pull you off, but mm-hmm. with that, you're out of action. And you've got to be pretty damn careful, because you don't want to be out of action. So that's really a dangerous time.
And it's not just you that you're responsible for.
No, you could be. We're trained because we got to be able to get that boat off there loaded. Because as soon as you get the troops on the beach, you may be taking casualties back. Mm-hmm. Because that's what the APA is designed to do.
Right. With your LCVP, you didn't have to evacuate wounded. You didn't have to take guys in for that first wave when things were hot and heavy. But you did get shot at.
Well, everybody did a little bit.
Uh-huh.
I mean,
it still doesn't feel good.
Well, I just remember a few times, again, along the beach. We were maybe too close to the shore, and you hear some zing-zings. And you say, thank God I heard him, because it's someone you don't hear that's get you.
But what do you do when that begins, when you realize that there are bullets flying and they're heading in your general direction?
Well, first of all, you get down. You got some armor plate along the side of that thing that's okay for 25 and 30 caliber, but you're going to get in trouble if they're hitting you with 50s and 20 millimeters.
A lot of Marines lost their lives at Iwo Jima, at Saipan, even a few at Tinian. Certainly, Okinawa's a bloody, bloody situation.
Oh, yeah.
And at one point or another, you were at all of those places, and you described seeing some of the aftermath. Did it hit you as a teenager at how great a price was being paid and how big this whole thing was?
Yeah. You really didn't have to think about it. It was just simply there.
You mentioned getting to Okinawa. Well, it was the latter half of the battle, but the battle's still going on there. And throughout that clash over that island, kamikazes were ever present. Just about everyone I've talked to who was there at some point around the coast of Okinawa witnessed some of those. Did you ever see some of that?
Only once. One of them came down, and they looked like they were coming after us, but then they saw a hospital ship which was beyond us, and they went off and hit it. Shortly thereafter, we again saw the hospital ship back at Guam. I remember two destroyers came in. One of them had the bow chopped off right behind the first turret, and the other one had been flattened. The whole stern was just flat with a water line, and for some, the Lord was good to them because their driving shafts still worked, and they could bring the ships in. Don't know whatever happened to them after that, but it was really quite a sight to see them.
Well, it kind of sounds like the Lord must have been good to you, too. I mean, you're doing a duty that was dangerous for a lot of guys. If you're at somewhere else at a different time doing the same job, you might not be here, and then this kamikaze goes past your ship. It's a hospital ship, which had to upset you a little bit, but at least you're still around, huh?
Anybody that who's a gunner at that time, and when I wasn't in a boat, I had a job. I was a 20-millimeter gunner.
So on your ship, this APA, the Brookings, you have all the LCVPs, and when you're making landings, you go off in those. But otherwise, if general quarters sound, you go to this position on a 20-millimeter.
I was a gunner on 21.
And that meant what you're shooting at is enemy aircraft.
Yes. And the only question that you ever have if you're shooting at one of those guys is, why can't this thing shoot faster? I was so scared the first time that they called general quarters, and it was real, that I jumped up from my bunk and ran up to the gun and opened the ready locker, wound up one of the magazines, they have to be cranked up, and loaded the gun and turned on the gun before the next guy got there.
So you did a few people's jobs.
Oh, I
did. You did the whole crew's job.
They all arrived and everything was ready because I was so scared. But it all turned out all right. There are some conversation pieces that came shortly thereafter that I don't think we can say on the air.
I'm sure you heard a lot of things that you can't repeat. Yeah. Well, and you mentioned how scared you are, and I think people appreciate that candor, and they can imagine themselves as a teenager feeling those same kinds of things. Throughout your whole time in the Navy, was there one moment or incident that got your attention the most, scared you the most, made you feel the most like, hey, I might not see my family again?
I need to turn a corner on this one.
All right.
When we were on the honor flight, sitting there in a big dining room, one of the guys said something about the typhoons.
Mm.
Yes, we went through 5 typhoons in the Pacific Ocean. I think the worst one was about 80 miles east of Okinawa when we were taking the 43rd Army Division to the surrender. Okinawa recently had a typhoon. They were saying this is the worst ever, and they compared it to the one in 45. We rode that one out, and I'll tell you, when your ship goes through one of those waves and goes up and then comes boom, you know, crash, and you look and you see that the two masts are going in opposite directions, you say, this thing, you could tear this thing apart. And there were times in other typhoons when I was on the bridge, the officer of the deck was almost washed overboard. One of the telephone talkers grabbed him and hung on to the rail and hung on to the man so he wouldn't get, because green water came right down on the bridge, which is 40 feet off the water.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm thinking back to earlier when you said, you know, what would you do, when I asked you what you would do when you're in your LCVP and they're firing at you, and you get down, and that's got to be a helpless feeling, not knowing if something's going to hit you or not. But it seems like these typhoons probably felt even more helpless, right?
You were watching almost every wave, you know.
You know, we just marked 70 years since the dropping of the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and this weekend marks the 70th anniversary of the Japanese surrender. When it comes to the atomic bomb, do you remember hearing about it when it happened?
Oh, of course I do. And I need to set this up for you.
Sure.
As you know, I am 88 years old, and you take away 70 years from that, and I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
3 weeks before my 19th birthday. Do I remember it? You bet your life. And on the 14th, when Japan actually surrendered, I remember Hiroshima. I remember Nagasaki. I even saw Nagasaki a couple of months later. There I was, 18 years old at the time, and exactly when it happened, we were in Giwan, Samar, picking up supplies, getting ready to invade Japan.
And you knew you guys were going to be invading Japan? You were aware that that's what your destiny was?
Yeah, they were showing us.
Did you think that was something you could survive, making those landings?
You had no question. Again, you were 18 and immortal. I mean, you know, I think you hear people say who got hit, they were surprised it was them.
That said, maybe you have a different answer to this question than a lot of guys that I've talked to, because I've had, you know, certainly scores of veterans who, just like you, were getting ready to invade Japan when it all came to an end. And most of them will say, you know, I'm a big fan of Harry Truman because when he made that decision to drop the bomb, he saved my life. Are you in that camp?
Yeah, I am. And I've argued about it for years and years and years, and I've had some more experience with just that.
Well, you have a very interesting story, I know, that hopefully we can get out of you that relates to that. But so you don't have to invade Japan. And then your ship was there in the harbor, Tokyo, in early September when they signed the surrender?
We came in about 2 days later, but yes, it was
okay. At that time.
Got another typhoon right there, too.
You got to figure out how to dodge those things.
I want to tell you what was, when we put the 43rd over Yokohama, on the pier sticking out, there's a couple of LSTs and a hospital ship. And about halfway through our unloading, like the guys in the boats were walking around on the piers talking to the guys. And a couple of buses pull up and the prisoners of war came out.
Wow.
They looked awful. And, of course, even now, you know, I get emotional about this.
Sure.
But they just looked terrible. And you were comforted. All of us gave them our cigarettes and everything we had on us. And then they got on the hospital ship, and they had big, thick mattresses, and they were going to take care of these guys on the way home. Then another group came through, and they were Australians. And they went to that LST at the end of the pier, and they had to ride that floating cork all the way to Australia. We were mad at our government and the Australian Navy that they didn't have something better up there for those guys to ride home.
Because what you're saying is the Americans, the Australians, they were both prisoners of war in the same kind of camps and both in the same kind of condition.
Probably lived next to each other, yeah. Sure.
Skin and bones. You're talking about guys who were 80 pounds when they should have been 180?
Exactly.
And I'm sure you'd never seen anything like that before.
I'd never seen people like that before. Just awful.
Did it make you angry against the enemy?
Yeah. You see, people would argue about the heinous destruction of the atomic bombs. And I'm saying, no, 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 no. These two bombs caused this country, who had stolen a religion and did all this stuff. It's just like it is today. You've got, what's the difference between a kamikaze or a terrorist attack? I mean, they're the same thing. You had this going on, where a people under the name of religion would make bonsai attacks, and you've got this going on in the Middle East today. I mean, it really is pretty similar.
And those prisoners of war that you saw, you could see how close to death they were at that point.
Oh, no question.
Without those bombs, good chance a lot of those die in captivity, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Not to mention possibly you and all these other guys on an invasion force that would die.
Yeah. You know, we've all read all the stories about operations intelligence that they had for the landing. It winds up that they've got 2 to 3 times as many people with every man, woman, and child coming after us.
And those forecasts expected upwards of 1 million Americans to die, and more than that on the Japanese side if that invasion had taken place, which it didn't. And you mentioned something earlier that I want to follow up on. You said 2 months after the second bomb was dropped on Nagasaki, you went to that city and saw what was left. What did you see there?
Nothing. They took us out to a hill nearby. We looked down, and there, say 4 or 5 miles away, was what was left. And if you remember the photographs of it, the only thing that is a light pole here and there, and then everything else is just flattened right out.
Did it blow your mind a little bit to realize that something was capable of that destruction?
Oh, yeah.
When it was all over and you got to come home, you mentioned you didn't see your dad for 2 years when you joked about seeing him the next weekend. What did that feel like to get back and see your family again?
I came back to Brockport. I got off the bus, and he stood there, gave me a big hug, and said, "Thank God you made it." Like many papas at that time, we were on a handshaking basis when I was 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
After that day, we never saw each other without a hug.
Wow. That's powerful. I know your story doesn't end with World War II, but is there anything else that you think people need to know about that time in our history, the guys that you served with, the things that you saw, or why it matters today?
Well, I would just go back to what I just said about the commonality of what you're seeing today in geopolitics and what happened at World War II.
In the savagery of ISIS, you see parallels to Imperial Japan or Nazi Germany?
I do, very much so, yeah.
So what can we learn from the way America and its allies prevailed 70 years ago that can help us now?
On the trip to Washington, the Korean Memorial.
This is your honor flight experience with Central Valley Honor Flight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, to answer your question, we were standing there looking at this particular memorial, and so many young teenagers, they were high school kids, came by and shook our hands and said, "Thank you for your service." I decided I've got to give them an answer. And I said, "Are you studying this?" And they all said, "Yes, that's one of the reasons we're here." And I said, "Then you remember what's happened and just darn well never let it happen again. That's what your job as a citizen."
Mm.
I think that's the only thing we can say. These kids have to know history to realize that we repeat ourselves again and again and again if we don't pay attention to history.
Boy, you said it. That's one of the biggest reasons I've been doing this show for all these years. And I'm sure those young people you met in Washington are not going to forget that encounter. There's also some history you're privy to that I bet most of our listeners are not aware of. It has to do with the possibility of nuclear weapons being used after World War II. When we come back, we'll explore some of the highly sensitive duty Charlie had during the Korean War. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.